Hey everyone, welcome back to the Grappling With Life podcast. Today I'm joined by Mike Torriero from America. And we've actually been speaking for quite a while, and I'm very happy that he's agreed to come onto the podcast and give us a unique... This is very special to me as well, because Mike is a thoroughbred wrestler, man. And we haven't had really many wrestlers apart from Dr. Amir and Coach Khalid on here. So... really interested to hear about the whole collegiate system and his experiences with wrestling in the United States. So, Mike, thank you very much for joining us, man.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
No, it's a pleasure, man. It's a pleasure. So I can see it's daytime where you are.
Yeah, it's just starting to... I'm just trying to get my computer plugged back in. The weather is just starting to break from winter to spring right now. So I'm in Detroit, Michigan, and it snowed maybe yesterday for a bit, but a good part of this morning was all flurries coming down. It was pretty peaceful, pretty nice, and now the sun's out and everything's melted again. But, you know, yesterday was daylight savings time, so we went from, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock. And, the sun will be out an hour later, right? As of this weekend
What time sunset for you guys?
That's a good question. So it's probably 5:45, this past, between 4:45 and 5:45 is probably when it was this past winter time, end of the winter. And now it's probably 6:45.
Okay.
6:30.
So, yeah, our daylight savings is on the 27th of March. So it goes forward. Okay. Yeah. So cool, man. I thought we had a really great idea by using Google Maps to kind of navigate. So, I didn't even actually think of it like this, because you're saying we do have people actually from your side of the pond watching. So I thought, let me get cracking. And Zach's going to pull up Google Maps. We'll show you where we are. And then we'll show you where the gym is as well, the Legion. And then you can just give us a tour of, I guess, your wrestling, what would you call it? A history through the eyes of Google Maps. So just put in our postcode, please, Zach.
That's us right here, man.
Oh, yeah, that's us. If you go back, is that the gym?
No, that's us.
Oh, that's us. If you go back completely up, all the way up, so we can see London. So... Move in a bit more. Okay, so Mike, have you been to London before, Mike?
Sort of, yeah. I've been there for a quick day, I think. So I was able to take the London Tube. I think that there was an accident in my life where I scheduled... Whenever I travel internationally, I try to get in, in the early morning, try to get into red eye. Land in a city in the early morning and then spend as much time as I can in that city until late in the evening, So I did that in London, except for I had booked, through my infinite wisdom, I landed at Heathrow and okay. I was flying out of what's the other one?
Gatwick.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
my so God. That was, what a nightmare.
It was right in and around the Olympics, I think. The Olympics in London.
Yeah.
So, absolute nightmare. flagged down some guy. I don't even know if it was an Uber at that point or I haven't talked about this. This is awful experience. Yeah. So, we knocked around London. We were able to get our luggage stowed away in, some sort of security place where we paid a couple bucks. I had a bunch of athletes with us.
Oh my God.
And we went gallivanting around and, somewhere between us landing, I think I knew for a little bit and I don't think that I let on to there. There was a bunch of high school age kids.
Right.
I don't know that I let on to them, but they were a clever group. So they caught on halfway through and we got caught. I don't know that I've experienced traffic like that. London traffic is quite significant.
It's a nightmare.
Between airports.
I'll tell you something.
We got there.
I'll tell you something, Mike. Yeah. sometimes the route to Heathrow is longer than the flight to wherever you're going. So if you're going by car, and you said Gatwick, so between Gatwick and Heathrow, oh my God! So you spent basically your whole day traveling between airports, basically, give or take.
This one driver, he was unbelievable. He was a saint, this guy. I don't know where he came from. I don't know what he did now. But, you know, he scooped us up and he stuffed us all in a car. Maybe there was a second car behind us, but he was leading the pack. And he was flying until he couldn't fly, until we were in traffic. But when he was able to, he was opened up. I was just in Detroit. I am in Detroit, but just recently I got in an Uber to go to the airport. And I said, hey, you know, I'm not in a rush, but, you know, if we hit some traffic, you know, that'll suck. So, you know, try to make the time up. And we hit a little bit of traffic and this guy pulled up onto the side of the road and drove on the...
On the pavement? The sidewalk, sorry.
For the median of the road for a good mile, I'd say, and then cut into a bunch of traffic.
Oh, my God.
And... it was interesting, to say the least.
What a nightmare. Zach, bring up the... I'll show you the distance. Go type in Heathrow and then type in Gatwick, bro. Because... So where were you headed?
I think I was probably headed back to New York just recently. I think that's when that happened. I was February.
Right.
So just heading from, you know, Detroit back to...
Yeah.
Back to New York City, back to Long Island for a little bit. Now, all right. So within that, I see the Eye of London, as you call it.
Yeah.
And you guys are located right in that northern part, which is, you know, the Brooklyn of.
Yeah. So Hackney, I mean, I use the word Brooklyn very loosely, man, because I know Brooklyn's probably the same size as London, isn't it?
I think they're pretty big, but I mean, so this is your industrial. When you say Brooklyn, you mean there's, you know, industrial space that's been converted over. You have, a bit of an artist community, a bit of a maker community, you know, guys like yourself who, you know, have a creative side, but you're not, you know, you're also a bit alpha and
that's it. Exactly.
You know, masculine, right? Yeah, I get it.
Exactly that, man. Yeah. To be honest with you, sometimes we stick out here, man. There's a lot of vegetarians here, man.
I've seen a bit of it here in the United States. I've traveled a bit.
Yeah, it's
this other countries too.
A new type of species, man. Like Berlin has it. Like so, Hackney. I guess London, yep. East London. I think since the Olympics, we're not too far from the Olympic Park, by the way. Yeah. So if you Zach, if you go to put directions, and then you'll see we're about 20 minutes from the Olympic Park. It's just there. Look, can you see it, Zach? Zach's having a Barney here.
So the only thing that I'm thinking right now is we're going to have a hard time if there's just a listener on the podcast being able to track along with us.
Yeah,
so,
that's true. That's true. Yeah. So
right now we're looking at the Eye of London, and you're, you know, a little bit, you know, north of the center of the Eye. Is that
that's
what,
it? It's northeast, basically. Northeast of London Eye, basically. For the American listeners. And the gym, Legion, is basically, it's about 6 miles, actually 5 miles from where we are here. So it's about a 10-minute drive. And that's we're in an industrial area. Can you see that? That's an industrial area, basically, and some...
You're on the third floor of that building, right?
Second floor,
with the glass.
That's it. Second floor. If you go to the street view, Zach. Yeah, you'll see it. So that's the gym.
Yeah, you guys have a great space up there.
Yeah, it's quite cool, man. So that's the gym on the outside.
Yeah.
And so we've got like the upstairs. So it runs across the whole top. It'd be ideal if we had both. The landlord offered us the bottom, but it was just too expensive. So, top was enough. But also, it's enough for what we're trying to do. You know, we're only open in the evenings anyway. Our program runs every day in the evenings and on the weekends as well. So tell me a bit about you now. I'm keen to hear where you grew up.
Right. So I, Right. So I think that you, you know, had mentioned, you know, a bit of trying to understand the, you know, you and your listeners, you know, wanted to understand a bit of, you know, what, how, you know, the U.S. system. So
yes,
I'm glad that we have maps up. So yeah. I think type in, you know, Sound Beach, New York.
Sound Beach. So while he's searching, Mike, you know, New York, New York's also a state, right? But also a city. Is that why it's called New York, New York?
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So
okay, right. There we go.
That's so New York City is, so new, there's 50 states in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
You know, they want to have statehood, and then you have the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., the U.S. Capitol.
Right.
You know, and they're sort of like their own entity. But, you know, by and large, we have 50 states. So I grew up in the state of New York on Long Island.
Oh, you're from Long Island, yeah?
Yep. And on the, in the county of Suffolk, in the town of Sound Beach. Right. Now, if you zoom out of that a little bit, you know, you'll be able to, and turn that Sound Beach to the north, maybe to the top, other way. Okay. Yep. And then if you scroll out a bit more and look to your left, you'll see New York City.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Long Island, is it because of that stretch there? That's Long Island.
Yeah, that's right. So they call Long Island because that's that stretch right there. And, you know, that's some of the best wrestling, just to, you know, give you, you know, without being able to see the map, you know, Long Island is some of the best strip of wrestling you know, in the world. You know, there's a number of different age level and Olympic level world medalists and champions of different age groups that have come from that island.
Okay.
You know, we're sort of, there's 3 million people on Long Island. You know, it's split into two different counties, and Brooklyn and Queens are sort of, you know, also on the island, but they're a part of New York.
Right.
So there's sort of a border on that. But yeah, I grew up, you know, on the eastern part of the North Shore of Long Island. And, you know, my dad worked for the city of New York. He was a fireman for the city of New York.
Cool.
So, you know, so he Mike, drove in every day.
So yeah. Mike, can I ask you a question? Sorry, man. Yep. How, like from the tip of Long Island to New York City, how long does it take? How far is it?
I mean,
roughly, if you had to
get. It can, I think that it's, let me see here. I have it. It's 117 miles.
Oh,
I'll
wow.
116 miles. So it's, I think it's, so it says it's 117 miles. I was thinking 116 is maybe the number that they do from, you know, Manhattan to Montauk, as they call, you know, yeah, not as they call it. It's the name of it.
Yeah. That one there. Yeah.
But yeah, it's quite long. And if you dig into there, you'll see that there's only one road really into Montauk, and right at the end there,
I see it. Yeah.
Yep. Then right at the end there is the Montauk Lighthouse. And that was built, you know, George Washington, I think, you know, had some interest in being able to construct that, because, you know, the Long Island Sound was an important waterway into the New York Harbor.
That's awesome, man. So just to give you an idea, yep, 116 miles from London would be about Birmingham, right? Yeah. Yeah, it'd be about Birmingham. So that's kind of the second city in the UK. That is absolutely nuts, man. The scale of America. That's crazy. Because that's half of England almost.
Yeah, that's right. I think that people sometimes don't understand
how big America,
you know, Americans
is.
Might, yeah, Americans, I don't think maybe understand how big America is, because they don't do much. You know, there's 300 million people in the United States. So, know, not all of them are, you know, being able to afford the opportunity. And it is an opportunity, and it's a luxury, you know, for most to be able to travel. And if they do, you know, it's not often internationally.
Yeah.
And then to be able to spend any sort of significant time internationally and, you know, do a public transit or drive from a city to a city that's, you know, so yeah, the grand scale of the United States is, you know, I try for it not to be lost in myself.
That's crazy. So Mike, would you say Sound Beach is like the suburbs?
Yeah. So this town right here that I grew up in, it's a very interesting story. So there was a paper, the Daily Mirror, which was a subscription newspaper in Queens.
Yeah.
And what happened was the Daily Mirror partnered with a real estate developer that owned a bunch of land in Sound Beach. And so you subscribe to the newspaper and you get an eighth of an acre of property offered to you for, you know, $50, $1,000.
Wow.
And, you know, then you get another acre of property for, you know, another $50, another $1,000, whatever it was. And so you basically subscribe to this paper and you spend a little bit of money and you bought a little lot of land and you went out and you pitch a tent or you put, you know, some sort of summer housing together. So a lot of people from New York City, Queens, particular, came out to Sound Beach and they were working folks to be able to summer. So, you know, eventually just things had grown from New York City out to the, you know, in every direction that you can go, you know, in a 360. And, you know, that summer housing eventually converted over to winter housing. So my older brother, you know, my younger brother, my parents, they still live in Sound Beach. It's definitely the suburbs. But it's pretty quaint because it's so close to the Long Island Sound, you know, body of water.
So how far back the Toreros go back in Sound Beach? Is it like just your family or is it kind of
Yeah, just our family.
Right.
And then my you know, my father's parents, their parents came over from Italy.
Okay.
You know, I think my grandmother might have been here. My grandfather came over when he was a young boy. And then my mother's family, they go back pretty far. You know, I haven't traced it all the way, but I think some of my cousins have, my second cousins, yeah, that we have relationships with. But I think that some of our family came over on the Mayflower. So, wow. That's what they say, right? That ship that landed here way long ago. And, so Sparks, Humanic, were the names in our family, but I think there was a Sparks that was, that went back pretty far as my mom's side goes.
That's awesome.
You know, a couple of marriages, a couple of different names, Greavy, another one. Family tree.
That's very awesome, man. Especially the Italians. They're very, especially when you watch, obviously we see, and I know, you know what's funny? Because I'm from North Africa, yeah? So from Algeria. And a lot of the mannerisms that the Italians have, it's very similar, man. Especially, hey, yo, you know, this kind of stuff, yeah? You know, when we watch them, especially when I watch them, I was like, oh my God, they've got mannerisms exactly like us. He goes, yeah, it's just crazy, man. Especially Sicily. If you go back, you know, hundreds of years, a lot of them came from North Africa. A lot of the, I know there's a big divide between the Sicilians and the, do you know what I'm saying? Like, for example, the word Mamaluk. Have you heard of that term?
Yeah, of course.
It's a derogatory term, right? Like someone who's an idiot or like a fool.
Yeah,
almost.
It's not. I mean, there's worse. Yeah, yeah. You can call somebody a Mamaluk.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, it's pretty derogatory.
So what that came from was the Mamluks. The Mamluks were like these. I think Turkish or Spanish. Moorish, you know the Moors from Spain.
Yeah,
they used to wear bright clothes, and they used to, so that's where that term comes from. Like they look kind of goofy, basically. Yeah, which is quite interesting. So it's funny how you know the you know history works, man. The Abbasids, yes. So it was from Moorish Spain, basically.
Well, yeah, I think that when I look at Europe and how you guys operate as an EU, you know, so on and so forth, it's that, you know, you're hot blooded because it's hot.
Yeah.
You don't want people near you, you know, get away from me. You know, you talk with your hands.
Yeah.
You know, when you start getting, you know, north into, you know, the northern part of Switzerland, northern Germany, Netherlands, Denmark, you know, these type of places, you know, it's cold there, and I don't think that they're they're not as hot blooded as you say, because yeah. it just
that's right.
You know,
that's right. That's
and
right.
And I think that you pass those. I think that you pass that that on. You know, for sure.
100%.
I'm gonna act like my dad, no matter what.
100%. 100%. So talk me through like your high school and. You know, you said there's a lot of wrestlers that come from Long Island and wrestling. What kind of wrestling teams, any teams that we've heard of or like, how does it kind of work there? Is it like college and high school and all that stuff? So just, yeah, so.
Yeah, right. So I think on both sides, we should talk about it. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, for your listeners over there and the way that I understand it, you're going to have to, you know, help me out here.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have a professional system here in the United States, you know, starting with your schools.
Right.
So, you know, you have a public school system that's funded by you know, some part of the government. The federal government
yep.
is going to try to give everybody an equal amount of money to be educated equally. That's, you know, never enough.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the different local, you know, towns, governments, counties, so on and so forth, you know, they try to help and take their tax dollars and put it to public schools. The lottery in the state of New York, as an example, maybe lotteries across the United States. You know, I believe that a portion of your lottery ticket that you can win on Friday night after eating pizza with your kids and watching TV on Friday
yeah.
is, you know, goes back to the school system. So you have a very, very robust and connected school system, and starting in middle school or junior high, and those grades are, so you have kindergarten,
yeah,
right? And kindergarten should typically be, you know, 5 years old.
Right.
And, you know, between 5 and 13, 5 and 12,
yeah,
it's just education.
Right.
And it's just recreation, kids. You know, as far as the school's concerned, you know, there'll be a gym class and there might be some arts and crafts, but there's nothing organized as far as within that school, keeping the kids after school right. and do anything athletic based.
So, Mike, that would be called, that would be called on our side, that would be called primary school. So our primary school starts right. from 5 years old to 11, which is slightly different to you guys. And then
no,
you go,
I think that's good for some argument that's going on Twitter. And we can talk about, you know, how you guys can follow some people here on Twitter and
okay,
other places
yeah.
to follow us. Yeah. But yeah, so 11 years old, I'm taking notes.
Yeah.
Okay. So 11, that's yeah. good to know. Okay.
And then basically, you go into secondary school. So secondary school is you start in, yes. So in primary school, you got reception class, which is kind of like kindergarten. And then year one, yep. year two, year three, year four, year five, and year six. So year six is like the last year of primary. And then you go into secondary school, which is year seven. And then from year seven to year 11 is your secondary school. And then you have college after secondary school, which is 2 years. So yeah, year 12 and year 13. And then you go into university. So at 18 years old, you go into university, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you guys are slightly different after primary school, which is your, what was that, middle school? Yeah, middle school. That's where, that's the interesting part. Because secondary school, you're right, for us, so in primary school, you don't really have like a sports program or it's more like you've got one teacher as well. They'll teach you all the classes, right? And then you might have a gym teacher or whatever it is. And then in secondary school, you kind of go to another school, which is a bigger school. So where all the kids go, basically.
That's right. So it sounds like, and if I'm doing my math correct, that, you know, kids from, we're sending kids, you know, you guys are, and so are the United States, sending kids to school at, you know, 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and then they're supposed to be graduating at 18.
Exactly.
In the United States, right. So in the United States, as far as United States wrestling is concerned,
yeah.
and as far as graduation, there are a couple of, there's a few kids that'll graduate you know, and be turning 19 the year of graduating, meaning they might be 18 years old in graduation.
Yeah.
But in July they turn 19, so they'd be 19 before, you know, the end of the fiscal year, if you will. Right. So yeah. So we have, you know, for the way that it went down for me, and I think the most simple way is you have, you know, elementary school, kid just go to school, they play, nothing goes on.
Yeah.
And then to go backwards, you know, to be able to talk about that. So that's one end of the spectrum is just, you know, at 5, 6 years old, you have kindergarten and you know, until about 11, you just have playtime.
Right. Exactly.
That's organized.
Exactly.
At 12 years old, 12 to 14, let's call it, you have, you know, what they call junior high or middle school. And so you're, and those schools might be within a high school. They might be next to a high school. Then the next age up until 18. So what's that? 15, 16, 17, 18. That's 9th through 12th grade.
Yeah. Yeah. 9. Yeah.
So your college, as you're calling it, is, you know, the secondary school, or, you know, just named differently.
Yeah.
Right. So again, in America, you have an elementary school, a middle school, then a high school, and the hierarchy goes from the high school all the way down. So in all of these schools, they're going to have some sort of sports-based activity after school for the high school kids. In the most affluent, best communities where they have high tax dollars coming in, they have a good, healthy budget, they have an active parent base who can get their kids, you'll have a plethora of sports available to you. Swimming, diving, track and field, running, cross country in the fall, winter track, running outside and then on indoor tracks in the wintertime, spring track. You can have wrestling during the winter, lacrosse, soccer, football, baseball, basketball, tennis. There's, you know, any number of sports. And then in the best programs, whether that's a whether that's an affluent area or a poor area, every high school has some sort of sports teams for the most part. And then they'll have a middle school, and those middle schools will have sports-based teams. And each of those teams will compete in other neighboring schools. And I call it a professional league because it's managed over. There's a league. There's a league official. There are, at a baseball game, there's, you know, by and large, you know, paint on the field, an umpire there.
Wow.
Uniforms for, you know, for both teams, you know, fans, scores reported into newspapers at the best levels. You know, people who keep track. And so, you know, I understand that in, you know, in Europe, and in England and London, you know, that you guys don't have, the government's not funding a lot of these sports-based programming. If they are, you know, there's not a coherent league where they're competing against other neighboring schools and towns.
No.
That everything is based, you know, privately, where you have to pay for all of your sporting ventures.
So I'll give an example. The closest thing I can describe to you, Mike, is, for example, soccer, yeah? So you have, like, the Premier League is the best league in the world, basically, yeah? So we have the biggest, in London, we've got, like, I think 4 or 5 big teams, maybe more, actually, but Premier League teams, you have, like, Arsenal, Chelsea, who've been sanctioned at the moment because of Abramovich, but, right. You know, West Ham. So what happens, these teams have outreach within the community. It's not enough. It's never enough. They also pump money in the community and try and get these kind of grassroots programs. But as far as schools are concerned, I used to actually work with schools. I used to run projects for a charity. And during the summertime, we used to have to run basically out of hours classes or programs and stuff, but nothing. The government does try sometimes, depends on which government has come in, they try and push certain things. Like, for example, during the Olympics, they kind of pump money into, for example, we've got the British Wrestling Association here.
Yep, I follow them, yep.
Yeah, so they organize kind of, but nothing to the scale of what America does. It's not in schools at the moment. That's the key. And I think for us, looking at the American structure, is that's why I feel like wrestling is such a strong sport in America, because it's embedded within your, you know, school scholastic system, isn't it? Whereas here, any sport, to be honest with you, but I mean, because obviously I'm biased when it comes to wrestling or combat sports in general. So yes, I'm really keen to see how. So you're saying basically that the sports in America, the high school sports, they basically run like the NFL, but on a minor level, if you know what I mean. Like there are progression routes from kind of wrestling in high school all the way up to, you know.
Yes, to be a teenager or a pre-teenager living in a suburban town in America,
yeah,
and having the opportunity to play organized sports,
yeah,
would be a professional league in any other country in the world.
That's
by
nuts, man.
by a lot of standards, in my opinion. It's quite an amazing experience. The organization, the selflessness,
yeah,
of, because these things are they're not making money.
Yeah.
You know, when I say this at the high school level, I mean, perhaps there's some people that are making money to, you know, have jobs, people to oversight this, different administrators in, you know, different districts, so on and so forth. But, you know, this isn't necessarily, maybe it's their sole, you know, function is to be the athletic director, right? So there's athletic directors of schools, and they're the director of athletics.
Right.
Right. So, and their job is to make sure that they have, you know, a healthy budget, and that the budget is being spent the right way, and that they're, you know, the best athletic directors are there to support their coaches. It's the coaches who are, you know, for the most part, often teachers within the school. And, you know, there's times where you can be, you know, a construction guy, you know, own a painting company, on Long Island, where the weather is, you know, maybe similar to London in some regard, meaning it's the winter time, and,
yeah,
you know, you're not going to be up on a ladder, you know, on a consistent fashion trying to, so you don't run your painting company in the winter time. So you might be able to go and coach at a high school, but, you know, 80-90% of teachers, or coaches within districts are teachers. So in the education system in America, you know, in wrestling, you know, it's often thought of as a career choice to go ahead and, you know, and in, this is all in contrary to grappling, which we can talk about in the United States,
okay,
which is probably similar to how it is in London.
Right.
But, you know, in grappling, you get a black belt. In grappling, I mean jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You get a black belt, you know, under a lineage, and then you're allowed to go and open up your own school.
Yeah.
And you can open your own school anyway. Nobody's stopping you in America. I don't know how it is in London, but I don't think anybody's stopping you over there. But yeah, the credibility of who you are and what you're trying to do is not it's not loved. It's not, you know, drawn on appropriately or affectionately from, you know, the real martial artists. So in that, you go and you open your own school. Well, in America, you go to wrestle at your youth program at the elementary school, because the high school coach decided that the youth kids in that elementary school that feed the middle school, that feed the high school, that he'll have a youth program after his high school program. So the school day ends at 3 o'clock, at 2 o'clock. And from 3 to 5, they have a high school wrestling practice. And then from 5 to 7, they have a elementary school practice where the coach stays, and he's going to coach all the elementary kid age group from, you know, 5 to 7 PM. And then at 8 PM, he's going to do all the middle kids wow. of that community. And, you know, he's a teacher, and the teacher, you know, in America, in New York, will get paid, you know, whatever they get paid, 30 grand, 125 grand, 110 grand a year, you know, whatever the amount of money is that they're getting paid, depending on where they're teaching and, you know, what tax dollars are going into the community. And you can get paid very well in certain communities and certain states to be a teacher, which you should be. You're educating kids all day, and you're, you know, trying to have them become critical thinkers and, you know, consider lots of opportunities as they develop. But the benefit is that when that gets done, you get paid a little bit of money more to go and head up a wrestling program. And guess what? They give you a budget. So they're going to pay you a little bit of money, and then they're going to give you some money. And guess what? They're also going to give you a wrestling room. And, you know, everything you need for that money for that wrestling room is going to be paid for by the school.
Wow.
And there's another school down the block, and they're doing the same thing. So we're going to pay for a bus to go from our school to their school. And when we get there, there's going to be one wrestling mat in the gym, which we rented out, and we pay for the electric. And we have people working the door, selling you a candy bar and a soda. And then there's going to be a referee in a uniform, and teams in uniforms. They're going to be fighting and yelling. And then after that gets done, someone's going to videotape it, and they're going to put it on a website, and people are going to be able to watch it from wherever they are in the world. And then that guy's going to report it and put it onto an actual paper that people are going to go to 7-Eleven, get their coffee, buy their paper, open it up, and see that, you know, Hamburg wrestled Rocky Point, and Hamburg lost by a point. Rocky Point's my school. lost by a point to, you know, a point or two to Rocky Point. So, again, I think that the opportunity that we have in America is unbelievable. And, you know, how do you guys fix it? How do you grow wrestling? Because I think that that's what I see out of what I follow, you know, on the internet, what I read on your website, what I see the different work that you guys are doing. Yeah. You know, I've listened to a bunch of your podcasts. I'm very active on social media. You know, we've spoken, you know, a handful number of times.
Yeah.
You know, so you're doing unbelievable work as far as seeing wrestling, and you want it to be more cohesive. And, you know, the answer is, you know, people say that America is not a socialist country. Well, we have, you know, a socialist high school program that I think is pretty good in the public school, education system in America. It's quite good, and it's great for wrestling. It's really what makes us good.
So, Mike, what I'm really interested in is your experience throughout your, because I want to see it through your eyes. So, because I'm guessing when you start high school, you sign up for the wrestling team, right? And there's tryouts, and then there's all these. So, and then you get picked for the team, then you do your duels, and then I think you guys wrestle weekly, right? Or there's competitions weekly, or there's a season, or just,
sort of. So, wrestling, you know, in America, and I think just about anywhere, is, you know, anybody can wrestle, right? That's the play on words and the literal term. So whether you have an arm or a missing leg, you know, you have an opportunity to be able to go wrestle. You know, there are no cuts on the wrestling team. You know, you might not be able to get a match. You know, you might have to sit out of certain drills. You know, there might be a conversation if, you know, you're cut out for it because you seem to be, you know, sitting out more than you're sitting in. Or getting involved, but, you know, there's no cutting in wrestling, right? It seems to me, my experience is that, you know, if a kid can make it through a workout, that the adults, you know, and there's a lot of young kids, and there's a lot of, you know, non-thoughtful coaches out there who, you know, are very barbaric and alpha only in their approach, who might drive some kids off, but my experience, you know, I've seen wrestling from, you know, coast to coast and a lot of different countries around this world, that in America, our public school system is good. If kids want to go out for wrestling, they get an opportunity to go out for wrestling and finish the season, get healthy if they want to lose some weight. So for me, I started wrestling when I was 4.
Wow.
Because my mom, you know, the high school coach of our community at Rocky Point High School, this guy, Robin Winkle, the godfather, he had a kid wrestling program because he knew that the kids from his elementary school were going to go to his middle school in order to go to his high school. So he had a kid wrestling program, and kid wrestling means that he had, you know, from kindergarten through sixth grade, you know, and then in seventh grade, there was a junior high program, and there was a coach and a team that competed seventh and eighth grade. And then in ninth grade, he got to the varsity program. So he was the varsity coach, ninth through 12th grade.
So explain to me varsity, man. So what does varsity mean? Because I hear that word a lot, but what does it actually mean?
So you have junior high, junior varsity, then varsity.
Okay.
Right? And it's broken up between seventh and eighth grade is junior high.
Right.
Right? So you're 12 to 14 years old.
Okay.
15 and 16, you know, ninth and 10th grade is junior varsity.
Right. It's just
and then you have
It's just how you split it up.
Yep. And then your varsity team is your 17th, your 18th. And that's, you know, 11th and 12th grade. So your varsity team.
Okay, I got you. Yeah.
And then, you know, after varsity, then you graduate from your town. Let's call it your town team, right? Yeah. You sleep at mom and dad's house. You drive your car or take public transit, depending on where you're living, to your high school, to your junior high, to your middle school, to your elementary school. And then after that, you get done, they give you a diploma and they go, awesome. You are awesome. You are, you know, the tax, your neighbors are so happy. They paid taxes and you won a state title. They're so happy. You got a college scholarship. You have, you know, companies or colleges and universities across the country that want you to wrestle because you're the best in the state.
Right.
And then you pack your stuff, pack your shit up. And, you know, at the highest level, you go from New York to Illinois, New York to West Virginia, New York to California. On the next level, you decide to wrestle for your community college.
Right.
So you have, you know, what is a college? A college is a focus of secondary education. And if you put enough colleges together, then you create a university. And a university is just it's a umbrella of a bunch of different colleges. Your college of engineering, your college of dentistry, your college of medicine, your college of general studies. So in America, you have an opportunity once you get done with your high school diploma. And there's a great website. If you go to, I don't know who's on the box right there,
Zach's gonna
but
do that,
Zach, if you go to the NWCA online, just Google NWCA online, college wrestling map.
This one?
Then you should come up. Look up program. It's a portal.nwcaonline.com, but I guess put on. Yeah. So in any event, there's a map. No, it's portal.nwc.
Into the address bar, Zach. Just type into the address bar.
That's it right there.
Oh, okay.
There right. Okay. So as you're looking at it, for people that aren't looking at home, it's a Google map of, and it's portal.nwcaonline.com.
I'll put it in the description. I'll put it in the description.
There you go.
Yeah.
So if you click on any of those, so if you click on NJCAA, the 57 programs.
Oh, okay.
So after college, these are National Junior College Athletic Association programs. And just leave that up there for a minute. So what you have there is you have the NJCAA, and that's your college program, meaning it's not yet at a university. It's not Division III. These are your two-year schools that'll get you an associate's degree.
Right.
So in order to be able to get you have to get to be able to get a bachelor's, you have to get an associate's, right? And that's 2 years of college. So you can go and wrestle all over the country, you know, by going to a 2 year school. Why would you go to a 2 year school? It's because your academic grades in high school might not be up to snuff.
Right. Okay.
They might say, hey, you have to go.
Sorry, Mike.
Say it again.
That's community college, basically. So if your grades are not at a certain level, you do 2 years in community college.
That's
in any of these kind of NJCAA. That's what you're saying.
That's right. So you're going to go to the, you're going to the community college, and these community colleges are very, very competitive.
Right.
It's probably the, you know, it could be arguably the, you know, the most competitive national tournament outside of the NCAA Division One. Right. Now, it, why would that be? And it's really not, but why would that be? It's because you have probably a bunch of guys that love wrestling who are good at wrestling, but you know, they may not be academically, you know, all that gifted. Astute.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, and there's two different ways that colleges, and they're wiping these off, but you take your, you know, standardized exam, your ACT or your SAT, yeah. And then you combine that with your grade point average and you get some sort of mixed result. You know, you throw in a couple letter of references and, you know, your letter of, you know, why you want to go to the school, and some people take a look and see if they're going to accept you or not.
Right.
So after you have your national junior college, you have your NAIA, your Division III, your Division II. And, you know, those are typically, you know, some form of four-year school that are just broken up into different federations. So, you know, in boxing, you have your WBA champ and your WBC champ.
Yeah.
You know, Lennox Lewis might hold both of them. It could be Lennox Lewis and Mike Tyson that hold both those belts. So
right.
The NAIA, Division III, Division II are sort of just different belt holders at, you know, different locations across the country, depending on what the school might do, the typical size of the school, you know, their funding as far as what their athletic department has. And then, you know, there's a bunch of great options there. They're super competitive and you can get a great education, and there's some really unbelievable coaches, and there's some great experiences as far as, you know, where you're going to be going to spend your money. You know, keep in mind that your National Junior College, your NAIA, your NCAA Division II and III, you know, you're spending your money to go get educated and to wrestle.
Right.
No one from those establishments, from those organizations, from those schools can offer you any money. They can say, hey, you're in a financial tax bracket where you might be able to get a grant to have some of this debt taken off, maybe yeah. all of it, depending on your financial situation, but we can't give you any money to come here. You're going to have to figure out, you know, this is the bill. This is some places that might give you some money because of your situation, but that's all we can do. And then you have the Division I program. You know, your Division I program is your Iowa, you know, your Penn State.
Yeah.
And those institutions, you know, are the best in the country, the best in the world. They have a lot of, you know, some of them have regional training centers, which I'm sure you're familiar with. Yeah. We can talk about. But you're able to, those colleges have, you know, for the most part, you know, anywhere from, you know, 4 to 9.9 scholarships that the coach at those schools can offer student athletes over a 4-year period.
What does that mean?
So they can't have, it means that I'm a coach and yeah. I can basically make sure that at any year that 10 kids, call it, are not paying any money to go to school.
Oh, I see. Right, right. So they can only give out maximum 10 scholarships, basically.
9.9.
Yeah, on average, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Very competitive.
And it changes. So, and those coaches can then give some money. So then what happens is you graduate high school.
Yeah.
And for this conversation, you basically have, you know, two choices. You can decide to go to a 4-year school right out of high school. So you can go to NAIA school.
Right.
You know, and your NAIA schools, a lot of them are sort of like in the Midwest, you know, the center of the country, a few here on the coast, a couple down in Florida. You know, Colorado School of Mines might be an NAIA school. There might be a school for boating. That's not necessarily true, but that is a Division III school. So you can go to an NAIA school. You can go to Division III school. Division III school would be New York University. It could be the Coast Guard Academy. It could be, you know, any number of small liberal arts schools, Williams College.
Right.
And you can see that sort of congregated up in the northeast part of and the middle part of the country, Iowa, Wartburg. You can go Division II. You know, that's more of a little bit more spread out from East Coast to West Coast.
So, Mike, can I ask
or
a question?
Or you can go Division. Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, you've got the different divisions, yeah? Is it like, mm-hmm. Can someone do, so how do you get to Division One? Is it, do you have to go through all the divisions to get Division One, or is it like, it depends on your basically grades and whether you're able to pay for
right.
it or all that stuff? Well, how does it work?
Right. So you basically have two options. You can go to the National Junior College Association, or you can go to a four-year school, NAIA, Division Three, Division Two, and then the NCAA Division One.
Right.
And to be able to go from high school to the NCAA Division One, you have to be probably pretty talented.
Wrestling wise?
Yeah, let's say that they're going to give you a scholarship to wrestle.
Right. Okay.
Right. So there's, looks like 79 on this map, 79 different colleges across the country.
Yeah.
And they're all vying. They have 9.9 scholarships to give. Let's say that everyone's equal, which they're not, but they have 9.9 scholarships to give. And then, you know, they might have a booster program where they have a regional training center that's training for the Olympics. After you get done graduating from college, you can continue to wrestle there and they can pay you, you know. So you can go, those 79 coaches are out at all the different states, the 50 different states across the country and the national tournament, recruiting and finding the best, you know, 50 athletes at each weight class, best 100 athletes at each weight class throughout the United States.
Right.
And then somewhere along that pool of 100 kids that are graduating each year at each weight class, then all of these different schools, with the hierarchy being NCAA Division One, because they have money to give and they can offer you a scholarship, 79 of them. And then, you know, all the way from Division Two, Three, NAIA, you know, they can say, hey, we want you to wrestle, but we can't really offer you much.
Right. Maybe so depending, it depends on your options. So for example, that naturally what will happen is Division One schools are going to get the top students, right? The top wrestlers and the top, and then basically everyone else will kind of have to pick, you know.
That's right. I think that
order.
If you, yeah, that's right. It sort of trickles down from there. I mean, there's right. always the you know, there's always the case where there was a very talented student athlete that went Division II or Division III because it was the best personal fit for them.
Right.
Okay. Right. And so a great example of that is our heavyweight Tervel Dolagnov. He was just awarded, I think, last week here in the United States, the bronze medal from the 2012 Olympics. He was a three-time national Division II national champion. So they didn't give him any money to wrestle there. Maybe he got some grant money because his parents were from, you know, Europe, and you know, maybe they weren't, you know, had a lot of money or whatever the case is. I don't know that to be true, but you know, nobody was paying for his school except for what his family situation. You know, right. and the government deemed, you know, feasible.
Right.
But he went off after he graduated. He was like, I kind of like this wrestling thing. I just grew into my body a little bit later than when I was, you know, 17, 18 years old.
Yeah.
I got pretty good at it. Let me go and wrestle. And, you know, he went off to the national tournament, you know, post university, you know, at the college open. So that's any age group. But after you graduate college. And he ended up beating all the Division One guys.
Right.
You know, won that tournament, you know, became our US Olympian, became our national champ, you know, ran a bunch of guys into retirement. You know, he was incredible. So you have, you know, as far as
there's many opportunities for you to kind of, there's many milestones that you can get into the program. So I was going to say to you, so you just mentioned something. So once you've finished university, there's another kind of tournament that you can get involved in.
Yeah. So at your university level, and that's, you know, what is it? I think I have it written down here. It's 416, you know, colleges for the men's side. And then you have, you know, the women's programs, you know, which is approaching, you know, 45, 50, some odd programs, I think, you know, maybe north of that now. They're doing fantastic. But, you know, each of those divisions is going to have their national tournament, and we wrestle folk style, collegiate style wrestling.
Yeah.
Right. It's the only style that we wrestle, that the United States wrestles a style only, no other parts of the country. There's a guy out of Australia, Gary Jones, who's at the Wrestling Foundation on Instagram, which is a good follow for you guys to take a look at. Right. He's from New Jersey. He's from the East Coast of the United States. He moved to Australia, and he's teaching American college, American folk style wrestling in Australia.
So what's the difference, Mike?
So the difference between folk style and freestyle is freestyle, as you know, and then you have Greco-Roman too, but let's keep that just in the back burner for, you know, the conversation. You know, freestyle is wrestled by every country in the world, and it's what's competed in at the World and Olympic Games, Championships and the Olympic Games, right? So we do that, but it's not organized like the public school. It's not in the public school system. It's a club system. You know, when I speak about a club, you know, after the season gets done in high school, you know, so they're doing their kid program, let's call it, in the middle of the winter.
Yeah.
Call that from November to March.
Yes.
And they do a kid program, and that high school coach is there every hour from, you know, 3 p.m. till 9 p.m. And he's doing high school after school, elementary school, middle school, and then junior high program. Well, in the seasons that you know, bookend that and sit in the middle, meaning the fall and the spring and then the summertime when teachers are off and kids are off. In the springtime, we'll have what they call Olympic season. So they'll take that wrestling room at the school. They'll open it up. They'll say that it's the, you know, if it's the Rocky Point Eagles, my high school team, it'll be the Eagle Wrestling Club.
Right.
And that coach will fill out a form, and he'll have access to that room from 3 to 9 p.m. And what he'll do is, or she'll do, depending on where you're at and depending on the mindset, they'll have wrestling practice in the spring. And then in the spring in America, you have USA Wrestling, that's our governing body.
Yeah.
And then you have a couple other underling organizations that also organize youth and hold events. USA Wrestling holds events, and they hold it in the Olympic styles, freestyle and Greco, for age groups all along the country. And then they'll provide insurance, where you'll have a My Way, which is a folk style based youth event program where you can take your kids to a My Way tournament and wrestle folk style. So the difference between folk style is it's what's wrestled at the public school, at the school level, and the university level in America from freestyle, which is, you know, club oriented, you know, wrestled in the Olympics. As far as the rule set, are you asking about the rule set?
Yeah, the rule set. So, for example, like Greco, you can only attack upper body, as we know, yeah? And freestyle, you can... Is it because it's the way the actual match is set up, right?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, without talking about the rules of freestyle or just a touch on them, you know, freestyle wrestling is two athletes in a circle and you try to push one or the other out. You get awarded for some points. You do some different techniques to get behind somebody and you know, you want to stay off your back.
Yeah.
And if I'm able to get behind you, then, you know, you're not going to stand up. You're most likely going to lay down flat in your belly for 15 seconds. I'm going to try to wrap my hands around you and turn you and make your back exposed to the mat, but you're going to lay flat on your belly.
Yes.
And getting up, there's no point system to get up and escape. And if you get up and escape in freestyle, I can pick you up over my head and throw you onto your head.
Yeah.
In folk style, once I take you down, if you stand up to your feet and you escape, then I give you a point for that.
Oh,
the reason that I make that safe is because I've taken away the idea to get suplexed, to get thrown over your head and thrown on your own head. So I can stand up to my feet, but you're not allowed to pick me up and arch me in any way where, you know, you're trying to do a high amplitude throw like you would be in freestyle or Greco.
So just to kind of pick up on this, Mike. Yeah. So say for example, I've taken you down. Yeah. I've taken your back. Now you've somehow scrambled. You've stood up. I'm still controlling your waist. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't throw you from there. So you can pick me up.
So you can pick me up as high as you want, but you can't take me in any sort of arching.
Right. You can't suplex basically. You can dump on their chest or get them back on the floor, but
yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, right.
That's right. So I think that's probably a pretty good way to describe it, just from ceiling to roof and from ceiling to basement. So I can pick you up and I can put you down.
Right.
And I can pick you up and I can carry, but then I have to put you down.
Right.
In the same way, I can't pick you up and
throw you.
Not in a high amplitude fashion.
Lateral drops you can do, right? Basically.
Yeah, I can't pick you up and back arch you to where I'm, you know, there's no points awarded for it. It's potentially dangerous. I have to be able to pick you up and put you down with the idea that it could be potentially dangerous and not to do that. I have to control you when I bring you back down and ensure that you're not going to, you know, if you don't know how to fall, that you're going to fall wrong.
No, I understand. Right? Yeah. That makes sense.
So then it's almost like in jiu-jitsu. In jiu-jitsu, you guys might start in guard where we're in turtle. They call that position turtle, right?
Yeah.
So it's sort of like turtle. Your butt's going to be against your heels.
Yeah.
And instead of being, you know, turtled up, you're just going to put your hands straight and have your arms, you know, sort of up and straight. And your chest is going to be up.
Yeah.
Sort of like a lion or a tiger.
We call it semi-prone.
Yeah, semi-prone again. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
And then I can't have my hands. The top guy will get on and he's not allowed, or she's not allowed in folk style, to clasp or have my hands locked between your armpits and your hips. At any point.
So it's got to be open. So controller arm or controller waist, basically.
Yep. Yeah. So the best way to put it is you're probably always going to try to have a tight waist.
Yeah.
And then you're going to try to control
one arm.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the same thing is true when you're breaking down wrestling, you know, whether that's, you know, on top or bottom, or up on your feet or in grappling, you probably always have that human being, you know, isolated. You quadrant them off, so 1, 2, 3, 4 quadrants.
Yeah,
and you have to, you know, control. You know, the center can be one mass, and the head can be another. You have to control, you know, the center and one other quadrant. You're not allowed to just control the center alone.
So it's either the center of the leg, center of the leg, center of the arm, or either arm or either leg, right? Or an ankle.
Yeah, that's right. So I can have one hand tight waist and an arm. You know, I can have a leg in on your leg. So kind of just given the idea that I'm not allowed to just wrap my hands around your body and hold you there and squeeze you, that I'm only allowed to do that with one arm.
I understand.
Then we get in that semi-prone position, we blow a whistle, and then the idea is for the bottom man to escape or to reverse the position. And once you reverse the position, the idea is to break that human being flat, you know, and go ahead and figure out how to pin them, put their back to the mat. Without... You know, so there's different types of holds. And in jiu-jitsu, you know, what you're ultimately trying to do is get to the mount position, right? You want to take somebody down and you want to pass their guard. And then you want to get into a full mount position to be able to strike. That's the most dominant position that you can be in wrestling. And there's not a lot of rules that are, you know, involved in jiu-jitsu. You know, for the most part, you can't gouge eyes, but you know, any sort of submission or threat of submission outside of me putting my fingers in different holes in your body, is what it is. And the game then becomes me going to full mount and being that dominant position. Game's over. You know, it's a fight. I've punched you. If we're just playing, you know, I've won the alpha male of the day. You know, so wrestling is just, you know, counter that, flip that on top, and I'm taking you down. You know, what am I trying to do? I'm trying to break you flat, and I'm trying to create, you know, mount position to keep you flat in any sort of north, south, east, west position that I can find. I'm not allowed to do everything that I can to make that happen. I have some rule sets.
So if you mount, when you start the bout, you start from standing, obviously, and then, so when do you start from parterre position, as in ground position? Is it like,
right? So the time frames are a bit different too, right? So, you know, folk style versus freestyle. Freestyle, you can have six minute match, I believe, 5 minute match. I don't even know what the freestyle rules are right now. But those matches are generally broken up into, you know, 2 minute periods. In folk style, at the highest level, at the university level, it is a 3 minute first period where you start on your feet.
Yeah.
And then it is a 2 minute second period, 2 minute third period. At the high school level, it's 2 minute first period, 2 minute second, 2 minute third. But at the university level, at the college level, after you graduate high school, you know, it's a 3-2-2. You start on your feet. We shake hands. We wrestle. I take you down, and I'm trying to keep you down. There's, you know, a phantom riding time point at the college and the university level, which means that if I hold you down for more than a minute cumulatively, so if I hold you down for, you know, a minute and 5 seconds, and you get on top of me and you hold me down for 10 seconds, then I have 55 seconds riding time.
Oh, I see. So there's all these officials, obviously, like calculating all this stuff.
And it doesn't make it very fan friendly, right?
But
and it changes the way that wrestling bouts are wrestled strategically, and from the moves that are awarded based on situation scenario. So there's a lot of debate, you know, there's wrestling Twitter here in America. You guys, you know, if you have kids or want to start coming over to learn about the programs, I'd say that there's a bunch of people we could talk about that you'd be able to add on to your Twitter feed. You know, that are very, you know, pretty knowledgeable from, you know, trying to understand what goes on. I think it's probably like a sitcom. You'd be able to catch up, you know, by just joining in and watching for a little bit. But this is the Division I through Division, you know, three level, right?
So college, they wrestle folk style as well, right? All the way up to university level. And then once you finish, you basically, you do freestyle.
That's it. That's right. So folk style in college, collegiate wrestling, and at the university level, you're done. And then you're done with school for the most part. You might go and get your graduate degree. You know, you might get, and your graduate degree can be a master's, right? You might go get your doctorate, your PhD. But there's only, you know, a couple more rungs of the ladder as far as, you know, being educated. You're allowed to go out into the workforce, as, you know, the banks and you know, college and universities have decided, you know, you know, hundreds, you know, 50, hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. Now you can go and work.
They've taken enough.
That's right. So they said, we've taken enough. You're indebted to us. Now go out and work for one of our, you know, our smaller cap companies. So, you know, after that, then you're chasing the Olympic dream, and, you know, you're trying to chase the Olympic dream because, you know, from 18 to 24, you might be good enough. Henry Cejudo here in America, you guys, I'm sure know, you know, he was good enough at an early age to go and compete at a world level. You know, Frank Camizo is another guy who at an early age, maybe even earlier than Henry, I think he was 16 competing at the world championships. Cuba.
The Italian guy. Oh, yeah. He wrestled for Cuba in the beginning.
Yeah, he wrestled for Cuba in the beginning, but at 16 or 17, he was the best in Cuba and, you know, probably one of the best in the world.
Wow.
you know, Cuba is an island off of America. It's a small little, you know, it's probably dangerous because of their ties with Russia. But nonetheless, just the body of land, the island itself is not that big, where in America is 300 million people. You know, that's only, Cuba's only 90 miles from Florida.
That's crazy, man. I've seen Scarface.
So when
man.
You start, everybody's seen Scarface. Everyone should see Scarface, right?
Yeah, it's like a, it's a must, man.
So, you know, it's only 90 miles, you know, Cuba from there. But so Henry Cejudo, that's why it's a great story, or why, you know, when talking about how big, how great he was, Kyle Snyder, these young athletes, you know, there's 300 million people. Maybe it's more than that. Maybe it's 350 million people come from the United States. It's enormous. So after you get done graduating from college, university, you can go and wrestle, you know, to make an Olympic, to make a world team, depending on the year. And that wrestling is governed by USA Wrestling. Right. So USA Wrestling and the public school system, there's probably two. USA Wrestling is incentivized throughout the year to host freestyle and Greco tournaments and to have a presence known throughout the United States, because they are, you know, they're USA Soccer, they're USA Wrestling. And then within the education system, you have, you know, high schools and universities and colleges who have wrestling teams that are promoting wrestling also, but they're teaching or, you know, competing in a different style, folk style.
So correct me if I'm wrong, so you won't be with regards to Greco, when would you start even rest? Because Greco is quite, you know, it's quite different from freestyle, and it's a whole different ball game, you know. So when would you start kind of doing Greco?
So I was fortunate at our high school where I grew up on Long Island, and this has changed over the number of years, since the 90s, 2000s, you know, until now, 2022. But back when I was wrestling in the, you know, in the 90s, let's call it, there was a lot of freestyle and Greco going on. So our coach, one of the teachers in our school, one of the guys in our community, decided to rent out the high school wrestling room in the spring. And so after you get done with kid wrestling, you say, your mom says, man, I like the little Johnny. You know, he seemed to be liking wrestling. You know, little Julie seemed to love wrestling. You know, their temperament has gone down. They're, you know, I see it's a healthy exercise for them. You know, they keep asking, where can I continue to wrestle? And typically at the high school wrestling room in their community, the coach is running some sort of program. Sometimes when you're lucky, that coach will have an affinity and a global view on the world as it's seen through the sport of wrestling and decide they're only going to teach Greco-Roman and freestyle wrestling and freestyle techniques, Greco techniques. And I know that my school over in Rocky Point does this, and the school, we're on the North Shore of Long Island, and I know the school over on the South Shore of Long Island, they want to do freestyle and Greco because the coach over there also likes the Olympics. And then, you know, he knows a guy a couple schools down who likes freestyle and Greco. And USA Wrestling will come in and say, hey, all you guys are coaching freestyle and Greco, why don't you host a tournament and we'll make it affordable for you guys to have uniforms, the referees, you know, all these type of things. And hey, at the end of this season, let's call it the springtime and part of the summer, we'll hold a big national tournament for you. And they'll compete at different age groups. 14 and 15 will be cadet. 16, 17, 18 will be, I'm sorry, 14 through 16 will be cadet. You know, 17, 18 will be junior level, they'll call it. So it depends on where you live, but you can start wrestling. In my case, I started wrestling freestyle and Greco when I was in fifth grade. So what are you? You're about 12 years old then, 10 years old?
Yeah.
11? So that's kind of how that works. Depending on, you know, who the coach is in your community, you know, who the that's where you're able to, you know, have some real impact.
So also what's funny is when you look at wrestling, yeah, you got freestyle. Wrestling is an alpha sport, yeah? But then you got Greco, which is like alpha alpha. The guys that are interested in Greco, they're like the alpha of alphas, man. I don't know what it's like in America, but here, I don't know, in Europe as well, the Greco guys are seen, they're the, you know, how do I put it? They're the assassins, man. They're the
yeah, well, yeah. I think, yeah, that's right, because they know how to be able to start wrestling. I mean, I don't know how it is in Europe. Yeah. But I imagine that they probably learned a double leg at some capacity some point.
Of course, yeah.
Right. So, you know, in America, I think that one of the things that holds some of our wrestling back is the hand fighting. We hand fight, yeah. But I don't think that we – I think that we do hand fighting. We don't do hand art. That sounds silly, but like yeah. There's technique, there's slickness, there's beauty, there's artful movements in being able to wrestle from your waist up and with just your arms.
100% more.
And you know, the best coaches in the world, the best wrestlers in the world probably have exposure to both of those things, and they probably learn how to blend both of them in, as opposed to just being so centric on one part of the you know, just the legs. So over in America, it's sort of the bastard stepchild. You know, Greco is the third tier of what's going on. It's not funded well. It's not participated well. And I think it's because it's very, very tough.
It's tough, man. Yeah.
And the college season is very, very tough here in America. Mm. You know, the first day of practice is, you know, October 13th in some places, but it's, you know, it's definitely, you know, before Halloween, which is October 31st, you know, it's October 13th, October 15th, October 18th, something along this timeline. And it goes, you know, in this year's case, it's going to go right until March 19th. And, you know, these coaches, some of them are, many of them are starting to be more thoughtful in how long that period of time is. Some of them still aren't. But, you know, a Division I American wrestler is some of the best cardiovascular in shape human beings on earth, you know, especially trained forces in Army and in the United States don't have the endurance that, you know, many college wrestlers have at the top peak. And, you know, you can't run that race car for too long without things breaking down. So it's after you get done with college and university, many athletes are student athletes are physically broken down, a shoulder's torn, a knee's gone, you know, a neck's, you know, smaller than it should be. And so they decide not to further it on and given a choice between if they want to further on their wrestling career or they want to go work and make some money. And within their wrestling career, they can do something that's known to them, attacking legs, and or that's very, very, very tough, not attack legs and go and fight people, you know, in a phone booth every day. That's, you know, that's what Greco is.
100%, man. 100%. Well, you know, there's two things I want to, before we wrap up, you know, I wanted to kind of, what's really intriguing me. So number one is, how do you set out your practices, your training sessions? What does that look like? And number two, the conditioning. So what do you guys do for this outside of wrestling, right? So nutrition, I guess, is what it is. But I'm more interested in more the strength and conditioning and who sets that out for them. Is it something that is because a lot of what I want this podcast to be essential reading or essential listening for our wrestlers, right? So I'm going to blast it out in the club so those guys can listen, even my kids as well, to listen and see how other, you know, nations kind of their approach towards wrestling. So can you just tell me a little bit about what the wrestling practice look like? How long does it last for? How many days a week do you train? And what the actual practice looks like?
Sure. So I think that's a simple question with a complex answer.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that you could probably break it down into four different groups, and it's going to come each season.
Okay.
So I'll speak about America, and then I think that's the first part, and I can speak to what I think, you know, needs to be done regardless of schooling.
Okay.
But in America, you have your season that starts, you know, call it November, December, January, February, most of March, half of March, a portion of March. And that's really the culmination of everything that you do throughout the year. That's the school-based wrestling. You know, it's where you started as a little kid at, you know, the Rocky Point Eagles, you know, elementary kid program as a kindergartner.
Yeah.
You know, you went on to be in that kid program until you were in middle school. And then at the middle school, you wrestled from the middle school maybe for a couple of years, or you got brought up to varsity and you wrestled, you know, for five, six years. So the question is, how do you schedule that? Build up towards that.
So Mike, I mean more the actual practice itself.
Yeah. In the season,
yeah,
you know, you're going to have a 2-hour block of time, maybe 2.5 hours from that winter season, we'll call right. that.
And how many then times a week is that, roughly?
Then in this, when is that when?
As in, sorry, sorry to keep cutting you. I think there's a slight delay, so I do apologize. So as in, how many times a week do you train those 2.5 hours in season?
Anywhere from 5 to 6 days a week, the best programs are training and competing. You know, 5-6 days a week in the winter season at the high school level, at the highest level before college and university,
okay.
at the pinnacle of what you're doing as a kid. So they're doing that 5 to 6 days a week. You're doing that at your high school, at your school, at the wrestling room that's on site over there. And then in the springtime, let's call that April, May, June, we'll call it freestyle season, Greco season. So April, May, June, July, you're probably doing that. You know, the best programs are probably doing it, you know, 2 to 4 nights a week. You're probably having some sort of wrestling and then competing on the weekends during that time. So you're probably wrestling, you know, 2 to 4 nights a week and then going to compete, you know, 1 day a week on the weekends. Then you have off August. That leads you into July. Then you have off all of August. And then September, October, leading into the season again, where November was the winter season, yeah. you're probably only hosting practice 2 nights a week and, you know, doing some sort of, you know, fitness and exercise the other 6 days a week, 5 days a week.
Okay.
That's full on. That's man. Probably how that goes.
And that's happening your whole wrestling career.
Sure. When I was in high school, that was when we were doing it in college, you're wrestling, you know, I was wrestling every day, you know, in October till March in college. And then, you know, I was trying to wrestle every day. Probably trying to wrestle every day when I was at college and university.
That's crazy, man.
You know, maybe not the summertime. You know, it's probably in the summertime if I came home and, you know, we're on the beach or hanging out, cruising 4-H babes. you know, maybe it's 2 or 3 times. But as far as, you know, what you guys want to do, you know, I think it's going to be near impossible to be able to, maybe it's not near impossible. The focus and the effort would have to be to do what British wrestling is doing, in my opinion. You have to go and put a nonprofit together that's yeah. going to have some parliamentary influence through lobbyists, so on and so forth, yeah. where, you know, the federal government's going to decide that they're going to continue to, they'll pilot out some money, some facilities, some space, and some other operational costs to be able to get wrestling at a bunch of different grammar schools, primary schools,
yeah.
You know, colleges.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, past that, I think that you need to be on the mat probably, you know, 330 days a year.
That's
you know, you gotta be on the mat a lot. And, you know, you need to do those things with certain intent to be great at wrestling, to be able to be combative with another human being. Then, you know, the first thing that's going to go into it is, you know, my strength. So there should be some sort of strength program, and it should be powerful strength lifts to ensure that, you know, if I hit you with a double leg, I can pick you up quickly. If I need to get you off me, I can explode off. If I need to get off a bottom because you took me down, I have the strength in my body to be able to, you know, just really push up and off my arms, get up and off my legs, you know, just in the most Neanderthal style of doing this. Yeah. And then the next most important thing is your flexibility. That's your key to your quickness. That's your ability to ward off a defense. You know, great wrestlers have great off, or good wrestlers have good offense. You know, great wrestlers have great defense. It's the ability to ward off a takedown. So I pick up a leg and I can bring it up to your shoulders above your head, and you have dexterity within your hips and your hip and your groin to be able to do a split. You know, it's pretty dangerous. So, you know, I don't know how you guys, we can talk about, you know, how to create some leagues, who else is doing it. I know that you have a franchise.
Yeah.
You know, so there's certain ways to be able to go ahead and organize. That's what needs to be: organized league, organized competition, organized coaches all being on the same page, you know, for their athletes. That opens a whole other can of worms, though, because, you know, some coaches, you know, might not want their athletes to go and compete. Mm. They might not be as good as what you're doing at Legion.
Yeah.
You know, so why would I go ahead and put my, you know, my secondary, you know, my best effort, which is not, you know, not as good as yours, out to compete?
I think what we're trying to do
in the private business world, it's hard.
What we're trying to do, we've got like so the BWA is like the our equivalent of USA Wrestling. So what they've given us is basically we've got different regions. So we've got the Southern region, Northern, the North, the South. And then you've got the Midlands, which is kind of in between. You've got North mm-hmm. Scotland and Northern Ireland and Wales, basically. So all these regions.
Yeah.
And each region. So within the Southern region, which includes London, just the past few months, we've been in talks about setting up duels, which is something that can happen. Because at the moment, really, I think there's only two junior competitions a year.
How many programs are there in the UK?
What, wrestling programs?
Yeah.
Oof. I couldn't tell you, man. You know, that's another thing as well. Not all wrestling clubs are registered. So I would say...
Yes.
If we go to the BWA website, Zach, I think there's about maybe 150, 200 clubs, maybe even less. I don't know, man. It's a good question, Mike. But on the British Wrestling website, it should have it. I'll bring it up.
So yeah, I mean, I think that it's all about you know, there needs to be connectivity to be able to grow a thing. There needs to be connectivity between, you know, these clubs and these coaches.
Yeah,
100%. Ultimately, anything that's getting done is getting done by a human being.
Yes.
You know, you can slap any brand on it, but so. You know, in that, you know, I don't know who is, it seems like, you know, they are there.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like the British Wrestling, you know, Club is, you know, should be the governing body.
That is the governing body. Yeah, that is. So the British Wrestling Association is the governing body, which is, so we have Sports England. I guess Sports England would be they're the one that give out grants and money to the different sports, which, like, for example, cycling, wrestling, swimming, climbing, whatever it is. They're the ones, and British Wrestling gets that funding and basically disperses it amongst the clubs and organizes tournaments and all this type of stuff. Yeah, interesting, man. Mike, go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I'm just saying that it looks like... you know, it looks like it's a pretty robust, you know, happening. where you're at. I don't know that I did a great job of explaining, you know, how wrestling, you know, works in the U.S. as far as it being based on schools, you know, versus, you know, you guys doing it, you know, a little bit differently. Yeah. Not so much schools, but, you know, maybe it's financed by the government, but it's more club based.
Yeah, it is club based. Yeah. But I think for us, it gives us, I think for me as well, I mean, even the list, because we're in Europe, yeah, so we look at the Russians, you've got the Japanese, you have the Indians, you have the Turkish. They've all got kind of like, so you look at, for example, I'll just give you Turkey. Turkey's at a national level. So the Turkish wrestling team is funded by the government. They're very well mm-hmm. funded. Same thing with Russia. Same thing with who else we got? Big rest. Italy, France. Who else do we have? I can't remember, man. But anyway, these guys are but with I guess the British side of things, it's actually getting more and more popular, you know, and especially since MMA has come into play. And the MMA has done wonders for wrestling in the UK because they've seen what wrestlers do in MMA. And I think the rise of jiu-jitsu as well. I think jiu-jitsu's taken, there's a lot of high-level jiu-jitsu guys now in the UK that are competing worldwide. And they've seen the benefits of wrestling as well. But to end the podcast, Mike, I'd love to talk to you for another hour and a half. But I would like, how would you describe the American wrestling style?
I think it's very tough, very in your face. You know, Iran has an underhook and they'll push an underhook. You know, America has the same sort of pace to their wrestling there. You know, there's not an underhook, but they'll take a million shots. They'll bash your head.
The kufte, they call it. And,
yeah, that extra seven minute match.
Yeah.
That we get used to at the college level, you know, helps quite a bit. I think at the international level, especially right after college, we have a lot of young guys who can go out and compete. It's because of the pace that they're able to push.
Yeah.
So I would say that's probably what I think about American wrestling.
You guys love to scramble as well. There's a lot of scrambling, like from what I see.
The rule sets in, you know, are so different from what you guys wrestle with freestyle.
Yeah.
It's more, it's more akin to grappling than freestyle is because you can go ahead and expose your back for, you know, short periods of time to be able to get to an advantageous position, you know.
Yeah.
You can't stay there forever because you start giving up back points, you know, liability risk of being pinned if it gets held there for, you know, I think more than a second, 1 second. But yeah, it's Ben Askren, who I'm sure that you know, he's been innovative to the sport in you know, incredible ways. You know, Steph Curry, you know, has influenced a whole generation around the three-pointer. You know, Ben Askren influenced a whole generation of wrestlers with his style of funkiness, for sure.
100%. Yeah. And last thing I'd ask is, do you cross-train? Do you jiu-jitsu or judo or anything else, or are you just like pure wrestling? Have you dabbled?
So, you know, at one point in my life, I was, you know, the wrestling coach down at the Hensel Gracie Academy in Midtown Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know, I coached at New York University, you know, prior to that. But I would be down at Hensel's, and sometimes I would roll with a select, you know, handful of guys that liked me that would roll with me.
Yeah.
You know, there was some kickboxing that got done there, some Muay Thai. So when I spent time at the New York Athletic, there was a ton of, they split the wrestling room with the fencers.
Okay.
And then in where I lived in Brooklyn, across the street from where I lived, was a Jeet Kune Do studio, which is Bruce Lee's form of,
Jeet Kune Do.
You know, martial arts.
Yeah.
So in my period of coaching when I lived in New York, I participated in all of those in some capacity to get a feel of it. And I studied and spoke to those coaches. There was a lot of difference and similarities that I liked from Jeet Kune Do to jiu-jitsu, you know, relevant back to wrestling. It changed my perception on, you know, what is the right way to stand? What is the right way to attack? What are we trying to do with feet work and angles? So it's always came back to wrestling. How would it help wrestling?
Yeah.
I love to wrestle.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've done a bunch of other, you know, combative martial arts in my life. But it was always really kind of as a student, never to, you know, become a competitor or a coach.
Awesome. And good luck next week, man. I know you're going to the college. You're saying that there's some D1 tournaments next week or something.
That's right. So I don't know how you guys are able to stream it. If you go to firstroad.uk or whatever it is. I think that's what you guys use in
First Road
in London. Yeah, something. I guess. I don't know. How you're able to stream, but you know, ESPN is the point. ESPN Plus, maybe ESPNU.
Right.
American time. It's gonna be Thursday. I think the first session starts at 12 and then 7 PM and then Friday, 12 and 7, and then Saturday, I think it's 10 and 7.
And where are they held?
They'll be in Detroit, where the city that I'm living right now. Oh, okay. So they'll be at the Little Caesars Arena, if you guys know what Little Caesars is.
Yeah.
But hot and ready, steamy pizza. they have an arena in downtown Detroit. So, you know, the whole country will be flying to and tuning in
right
to, you know, the NCAA Division I, you know, college national title. So it's exciting because there's a lot of different team races, you know, a lot of different teams that could win the team races here. You know, for a long time it was Penn State, you know, and then whoever finished second. And this year's, that's not the case. So yeah, it's Little Caesars Arena. It's Detroit, Michigan. That's where I live.
Is that Motown? Yeah.
You know, right on that. That's Motown, baby. You know, Detroit's a very, very big city. You know, it's bigger land mass than a lot of other cities combined.
I know it had a few problems in it during the credit crunch. It had some part of the cities went bankrupt and stuff. What's it like now?
That's right. Yeah. So the city went bankrupt. You know, they made a couple strategic moves. There's an island a little bit north of what you guys are looking at right there, Belle Isle, that was owned by the city of Detroit, and they've, you know, gave it over as a 50-year contract to the state of Michigan now. So the state of Michigan and Michigan's budget and their people and their workforce take care of that island,
right,
which is based on Central Park. You know, the same designer, went through designing that. So the city went through, you know, bankruptcy. They've gotten a new mayor. They've hired a bunch of, you know, new personnel. There's a young group of folks that are working for the city of Detroit right now. And it's because they're able to really go ahead and reshape the city. You know, land planners and finance committees for real estate, and, you know, all this land and all this vacant properties, all these semi structures, you know, that sit in the smack hub of, you know, what was American manufacturing in the middle to be able to, you know, ship things out. You know, it's some people's dream to be able to have an opportunity to rethink those things and create them, create new life in them.
So
it's okay. It's still pretty beat up. There's a lot of third world country that looks like the city of Detroit, a lot of burned out houses and, you know, pothole streets.
Yeah.
But like anything else, you know, it's got to burn, then it'll start growing back. And, you know, I'm here because I think that it's a place that's going to, you know, grow back strong over the next, you know, 10 plus years.
So I'm sure you've got a lot of hipsters now. Well, the gentrification has started. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny. I think that, you know, there's hipster and then there are creatives.
Yeah.
And they're hard to
distinguish between each other. Yeah.
Yeah. But nobody who's living in, you know, maybe me, I'm a hipster, because I'm sort of like a fake guy, but you know, the people who are in Detroit right now are really creative.
Right.
You know, this is what they're supposed to be doing. They're not going to, you know, it's Detroit or nothing, you know, homeless or nothing. Where I think that the hipster will find the fad, cool neighborhoods like I used to live in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, you know, the art district in Miami, you know, perhaps where you're at right now, where, you know, they're creative, they're smart, but there's also a standard of living.
Yes.
Right. They're not going to go homeless just for the cause.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. So that's where I think that this distinction is. But in the city of Detroit, you have, you know, a lot of really, whatever art you have is great. Whatever music you have is great. Whatever athletic scene you have is great. Whatever dining scene you have is great. So we have a lot of, and I say we, I've been here for a couple of years, you know, I'm probably a real New York guy, but in Detroit, and like to say we, that I'm living here now, is we have a lot of great everything. We just don't have a lot of it.
Right. I understand.
Right. So, you know, we have good food, we have great restaurants, we have a lot of, you know, four professional sports teams that are in the city of Detroit that are in walking distance. But we don't have a lot of restaurants spread throughout the landmass.
It's concentrated because the city is so big. Specific areas. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. So, you know, again, I think those things are changing. I've met people all across the country and the world after COVID have to, you know, redefine how they're living and how their workspace is.
Yeah.
You know, can we do vertical farming and grow inside? You know, I think the answer is probably no. You know, I don't think there's enough, you know, quality in the soil to be able to make those type of things, you know, real. You know, that a tomato can look pretty grown inside, but it's never going to taste like a tomato that's grown outside. This type of thing. So, yeah, that's my long-winded. You know, I don't even know where we started with that, but that's where
don't
I went.
Don't worry about it, man. I thank you very much. I appreciate you taking your time out and actually enriching us with the whole American culture, especially the wrestling, which we love very, very dearly here at Legion and on this podcast as well. So, Mike.
Yeah, so I guess the only thing that I'd say to you before we close up, and I appreciate it, is, you know, as your team wants to come to America and how you know, guys want to go over to travel where you are.
Yeah.
You know, for you guys coming over to me, I think it's pretty simple, right? Just, I know a few folks here in the United States that can, you know, help your guys have a great experience if they want to learn how to wrestle and meet some good people. You know, and then, you know, just while we're talking about it, you know, in case I copy and paste this into a link and there's no website, you know, they're going to Legion Grappling.
LegionGrappling.com.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. And if you ever want to, if you're ever in London, I'd be very upset if you don't look me up, man.
Yeah, look, I think that you guys are doing a lot of wrestling over there, and you guys are doing a lot of, you know, combative arts, and that the world could be quite flat through, you know, relationships and just as simple as following social media. And figuring out that traveling is not as cheap or is not as expensive as you think that it could be. You know, and, you know, some exchange programs. So I know that we're doing it with Journeyman Wrestling up in the U.S., Frank Papalizio. You know, perhaps you're going to host an event along with British Wrestling and invite some Americans over.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what the goal should be.
100%. You can hold us to that, man, definitely. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right.
I'll let you enjoy the rest of your day, man. Take care, brother.
All right, sounds good.
There you have it, Mike Torriero from Detroit, Michigan, Motown. Very interesting, very in-depth conversation. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And that's it, man. I'll see you guys on the next one.